Obviously, this is the living room.
Maria Diaz is showing me around her cozy Pawtucket apartment. It's got three bedrooms, a kitchen and living area, and a clean white bathroom.
This is the bathroom, and this is why I say I like it. It's like I got shelves. And I put everything in its little baskets and the decorations.
Diaz says she's still decorating, but places a hand on one wall lined with framed photographs.
This is my favorite wall.
Why?
Because of the pictures. My children, my mom, my parents when they were kids. That's my dad. Family.
Diaz lives in this apartment with her two daughters. She works in event planning and pays about $250 per month. Her building is owned by the Pawtucket Housing Authority, which subsidizes her rent. Before this apartment, Diaz and her children were essentially homeless. After leaving a bad relationship, the family jumped between couch surfing, efficiency apartments, and motels. For 2 years, her name was on various housing waitlists in Pawtucket and Providence.
And that day you found out that you got the apartment,
I cried. I cried so many tears of joy, and I was, yeah, and then I got the opportunity to the things I always wanted is to be able to have my mom come visit, you know, and have that stable place for her to come, and she was here for a month.
Diaz is a lucky case. There are thousands more on waitlists around the state hoping for a place in a subsidized unit like this one. Rhode Island faces a housing shortage in general that has a disproportionately negative effect on the poorest people in the state who have little choice in their housing. But building more affordable housing is an arduous process.
There are two major barriers to getting affordable housing built in Rhode Island.
That's Carrie Zaslow. She sits on the state's Housing Resource Commission, a group that works on affordable housing policy for the state.
The first being that the cost of construction, the cost of developing affordable housing, is close actually to the cost of developing housing in Boston.
And that's expensive. When you're building affordable housing, there are limits on how much a home can be sold or rented for, and it's usually well below market rate, meaning you likely won't recoup those high construction costs.
So even as a nonprofit developer of affordable housing, you're not necessarily looking to make profits, but you do need to make sure that you're breaking even. And it's very challenging to do that here in Rhode Island.
Jean Lamb is one of those nonprofit developers. She's the head of the Smith Hill Community Development Corporation.
Oh my gosh, I can't even count how many numbers of projects that I look at that just don't make it to the drawing board.
Community Development Corporations, or CDCs, are nonprofits building affordable housing. Her group is just one of many in Rhode Island. Standing in her Providence office, Lamb opens a binder and rifles through page after page of potential homes she hopes to redevelop.
So you'll see that I have 1, 2, 3, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15. That's many. 17, 18. So about 27 buildings right now that I'm hoping to get through the pipeline.
But only a few of those will come to fruition. Every day, Lamb pores over classified ads, auction announcements, or just walks around her gritty Smith Hill neighborhood looking for abandoned homes she can buy. They aren't hard to find.
Fast forward almost 24 to 36 months down the road later, turnkey for a new tenant. It can take up to 2 to 3 years to develop a piece of property to move a resident in.
By comparison, it takes just 9 months to develop a market rate building in New England, according to the National Association of Home Builders. But let's say she finds that perfect building. First, she has to compete with for-profit developers who often have cash at the ready. A nonprofit like hers does not. She remembers a recent foreclosure auction she attended.
And walking over, I was faced with probably 6 or 7 landlords. And they're all there with their, you know, their money, and they're ready to bid. And it really took me back to see that all of these potential landlords or investors who don't even live in our neighborhood are ready to scoop it up.
But let's say Lamb does get the property. She now faces the obstacle of paying for those high construction costs. It takes a whole bunch of funding sources to build just one unit of affordable housing, some of which is available in the form of that housing bond we talked about earlier. But it's not enough. And when you go looking for money, funders want to see that you already have other funders lined up. They don't want to sign on to a project that could fall through. It's kind of like jumping into a pool naked. No one wants to be the first one to do it. That's why it takes so long to build. And here's another reason. local opposition. Again, Carrie Zaslow.
You'll see communities rise up and either oppose it, or you'll see different types of zoning comes up, makes it very difficult to build.
Public backlash can derail these projects.
Their opposition often is based on the fact that they believe that people who don't have jobs, who aren't productive members of society, are going to be moving into their community and are going to ultimately be a burden on their community.
In other words, people hanging out on the government dole. That's a misconception, says Zaslow.
When we're talking about affordable housing, we're talking about housing for people who have jobs, who are the people that we see every day working, that are the EMTs, that are the teachers' aides. These are people who need affordable housing.
She says that misconception has trickled into political thinking as well. You may be hard-pressed to find a lawmaker opposed to affordable housing in principle, but Zaslow says there isn't a widespread political will to make it a priority.
For politicians, you know, part of the issue is also that misconception, because it gets lumped in with sort of entitlements.
Like Medicaid or welfare. But those get state funding. Affordable housing doesn't get included in the regular state budget. Instead, it gets a kind of loan, like this most recent bond, and even then, only intermittently. That's not the case in other nearby states, says Zaslow.
We can look at our neighboring states of Massachusetts and Connecticut and see that they have made, as states, investments in making sure that they are funding affordable housing as part of their state budget. That has not happened in Rhode Island yet.
John Bender, Rhode Island Public Radio.